Thank you so much for that exceptionally kind introduction, Esther, and thanks to you all for inviting me to share this wonderful occasion with you. I'm really honored to be part of the events leading up to your graduation from the law school that we love, and I'm very grateful to you for giving me the opportunity. I'm assuming that you asked me to give this talk so that I could tell you about some recent changes to the jurisdiction of the federal courts. I'm planning to spend the first 2 hours or so of my talk describing the scope of the federal district court's jurisdiction as it stood when you arrived at the law school in August 2010. Then I'll spend the third hour on the changes that Congress made midway through your second year when it enacted the Federal Courts Jurisdiction and Venue Clarification Act, which you all probably know as the FCJVCA. And I'll close with some admittedly bittersweet reflections about the end of certain aspects of the jurisdictional system of your youths and the new vistas provided by the jurisdictional system that awaits you. But it occurs to me that there are a few ways in which you yourselves are on the brink of some changes. So before I get to my main program about jurisdiction, I thought I'd say just a few words about your own situation. Most of you are reaching the end of your formal education, and you'll never be in school again. That is a big milestone, one that's worth pausing at for a little reflection. One reason to pause at this milestone is just to look back at the road you've traveled and to take pride in what you have accomplished. Thanks to your talents and hard work, and probably the support of family or friends or other loved ones, you're about to graduate from what you and I know to be the best law school in the country. One that combines academic rigor with humanity, one that cares about turning out not just good lawyers, but also good people. You are well on your way to being good lawyers, and you're already good people. I've seen you show grace, courage, and good cheer in the face of struggles small and big, worries about family, friends, jobs, classes, and even health. I've seen you rally to support each other when one of your classmates died tragically in a car accident after your first year, and I've seen you reach out to support her grieving family. I've seen you make time for your own families, and I've seen you help complete strangers for whom you could do some good. I've seen you throw yourselves into causes without demonizing those who disagree with you, and I've seen you engage in simple acts of kindness and decency that can be more important than causes. Inside the classroom, I've seen you work diligently to acquire both the knowledge and the analytic tools that law school can convey. The traditional model of legal education is under attack these days, but I think you'll find that the education you've worked so hard for over the last 3 years was indeed worth getting, and that it will stand you in good stead for the entire rest of your career. When Dean Mahoney welcomed you to law school at your orientation in 2010, he told you that law school would literally change how you think. You'd come to think like a lawyer. Part of what that means is simply knowing a lot of law and understanding the categories that lawyers use to organize law and legal argument. Part of what it means is being able to interpret both written laws and judicial opinions in the way that lawyers do, and being able to apply what they say in new situations. But part of what it means to think like a lawyer is to be able to take a complex problem, break it down into its distinct analytical steps, figure out how all the steps fit together, and maybe reassemble the problem into a solution. That's a very flexible skill, one that you can and will use in a lot of different fields and in a lot of different ways. I've seen firsthand how hard you've worked both to build that skill and to get the foundation of legal knowledge that it takes to be a top-flight lawyer. You should all be very proud of what you have accomplished here. But in addition to looking back over the road that you've traveled so far, another reason to pause at this milestone is to look forward and think about how to travel the road yet to come. So I want to try to offer a few pieces of advice for the future. Exactly 20 years ago, I was in your shoes, about to graduate from law school. I confess that in those days, when I was about to hear a graduation speech, I would sometimes amuse myself by trying to come up with the most cliched lines that the speaker could possibly use, like, commencement is not an end, but a beginning. But of course, now that I'm on this side of the podium, I find myself wanting to emphasize that, you know, commencement really is a beginning. That got me to thinking about cliches. We live in an age of irony, and we like to poke fun at them. Yet one of the reasons why things become cliched is that they're said a whole lot. And sometimes the reason why they're said a whole lot is that they're true. So there's a sense in which cliches capture the enduring wisdom and experience of a society. That's why I encourage you all to train your minds to think exclusively in terms of cliches and never to exercise any independent judgment of your own. If you're the only one who thinks something, you are almost certainly wrong. Just follow the herd. Actually, as some of you may have guessed, I was being a little ironic there. Ever since junior high school, you've all felt a lot of pressure to conform to what other people are doing. And that pressure, I'm sorry to say, doesn't stop. Whether you're working in government, or a law firm, or the corporate world, or a nonprofit, you'll face pressure to fit in, to please your bosses, and to go along with what the herd is doing. Usually that pressure won't create any big ethical dilemmas. Your bosses and colleagues will have moral compasses of their own, and you'll usually be able to please them without doing anything that you'll regret later. Often, moreover, there won't be anything wrong with just doing what's expected of you. There is some wisdom in crowds as well as in cliches. At the end of the day, though, the person who has to live with what you do is you. The herd won't help you when you're lying awake 20 years from now, feeling guilty about bad things that you did or good things that you failed to do. Respect the herd, take its wisdom seriously, but make the ultimate judgments yourself. Just as you shouldn't let the desire to conform to expectations drive too much of what you do, I would say the same thing about ambition. We lawyers tend to be an ambitious group, and ambition can lead to a lot of good things. It can help motivate people to work hard, stay out of trouble, do their jobs well. But ambition can also be corrosive. It can cause people to cut ethical corners and to sacrifice important relationships. And when ambition is not realized, it can turn to bitterness and envy. There's nothing at all wrong with wanting to work hard at your profession and to do a good job for your clients. To the contrary, that is totally admirable and desirable. It's also fine to want to be recognized for doing a good job, but taking pride in your work is more important than taking credit for your work. Recently, I came across a piece of advice from John Wooden, a legendary college basketball coach. Here's the advice about competitive, we have a UCLA person in the audience here. Here's the advice about competitiveness that he got from his father and that he passed along to his players. Never try to be better than anyone else, but never stop trying to be the best you can be. That strikes me as a good way to live. It's also important to know yourself well enough to know what character flaws you're most susceptible to, and then to take steps to guard against them. For instance, if you're the sort of person who is ambitious for external recognition, make special efforts to reinforce the aspects of your life that ambition might cause you to shortchange. Don't take your spouse or partner or significant other for granted. If you have children, don't take them for granted either. Work hard at your family relationships just as you work hard at your job, and be faithful to both. That honestly is the best piece of advice that I can offer for long-term happiness. Don't let short-term considerations, like the immediate demands of your job, always take precedence over long-term considerations. If you always let the short-term win when it comes into conflict with the long-term, then the long-term is going to lose, and the long-term tends to last longer than the short-term. For most of you, though, that advice will probably be more relevant to decisions that you'll be making 5 or 10 years from now than it is to your present situation. So let me offer a few pieces of advice that may speak more to what you're about to do. The first piece of advice is about making mistakes. Here's a story from my own time as a young associate at a law firm. Early on, I was assigned to write a memo surveying some developments in tort law. I had learned something in law school about how to research judicial opinions, but I was still a little shaky on how to research statutes. So my memo completely missed a statute that the state legislature had recently enacted that dealt specifically with one of the topics that my memo was talking about. But that was okay, because even more recently, the state Supreme Court had held that that new statute was unconstitutional, in an opinion that my memo also completely missed. I may not have been so great at researching judicial opinions then either. Here's the lesson. When you make mistakes, be sure to make them in pairs so that they cancel each other out. An even number of mistakes, like 0 or 2, can be preferable to an odd number. No. Here's the real lesson. You're going to make some mistakes. Naturally, you should try hard not to. Competence at your job is a great virtue, and people are depending on you to get things right. But everybody makes mistakes sometimes. When, despite your best efforts, you do make a mistake, beat yourself up about it to an appropriate extent and learn from it for the future, but don't keep dwelling on what you did wrong in the past, except to the extent that you can set it right. All you can do is your best, which is going to be very good, but isn't always going to be perfect. Along the same lines, if and when you're supervising other lawyers or staff members, remember that some of them may conceivably be human as well. Even when you haven't made any mistakes, don't be too contemptuous of the mistakes of others. The shoe may be on the other foot someday. And for those of you who remember Dean Wormer, that foot is me. I'm sure you don't need any lessons in treating other people with respect. That's one of the hallmarks of UVA. But that leads into my final piece of advice. Try to bring some of UVA Law School to the firms, companies, organizations, and other places you go after you graduate. I don't mean that you should swipe any of the cherry paneling on your way out. Though that does remind me of my son's story about a friend who returned from a music festival with a poster that said, "Please do not steal the posters." I don't teach criminal law, so I don't know whether irony is a defense. But actually, it may well be at indie music festivals. Anyway. We all know that one of the things that makes UVA Law special is its community, the collegiality, civility, and mutual respect that all of you bring to your interactions with everyone here. That's something that the law school tries to nurture, but you're the ones who make it happen. Each year, you and your fellow students are the ones who create and recreate the ethos that makes UVA Law such a special place. And unlike the cherry paneling, that ethos is something that you can take with you without diminishing it here. If anything, you're taking it with you and showing everyone what it means to be a UVA lawyer reinforces it here. Many of your predecessors have found it sad to leave UVA, and I'm selfish enough to hope that some of you find it sad as well. But it won't be as sad if you can spread some of the characteristics of this place to your new workplaces and communities. Even if you're not naturally outgoing, work hard at building a community among the people in your office. Maybe that won't entail softball, but come up with things that it can entail, like lunch outings or reading groups or coffee hours or whatever. Beyond your offices, work hard at building norms of civility and mutual respect among the lawyers in your broader communities. For starters, make it a point to treat opposing counsel with consideration. That may not be the norm in every community where you'll practice, but it should be your norm, and you can help to make it a broader norm. Nothing in your obligation to represent your client zealously requires you to be rude or tendentious with your adversaries, and I'm not sure that it's a requirement of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure that lawyers conducting discovery have to send nasty letters to each other that are written for the sole purpose of posturing for the court. I'm supposed to charge you, so here goes. I charge you to spread what is best about UVA to the workplaces and communities where you're heading. I charge you to respect other people's wisdom, but to think for yourselves. I charge you to make an even number of mistakes. That turns out to be a good idea. But in any event, I charge you to move on from your mistakes once you've learned from them. If you find ambition getting the best of you, I charge you to broaden your ambition so that it's about more than just your career. And I charge you to do your best, both at home and in the office, without trying to be better than anyone else. Thank you for the privilege of speaking with you today, and thank you for the privilege of teaching at a law school with the ethos that you have perpetuated here. I know I speak for the rest of the faculty when I say that we are enormously proud to have you as part of the UVA family, and we will look forward eagerly to hearing from you in the years to come. Please keep us posted about how you're doing, and please come back for your reunions. You will have much news for us, because commencement is a beginning rather than an end.